I'm John Kroll. Today's No Limits is going to generate a lot of buzz. We're going to talk about bees. We're going to talk about what makes them happy. We'll discuss bees and hives and what plants are the ones most likely to make bees thrive. My guests are WFYI's own beekeeper, Ross Harding, and Indiana Garden author and expert, Joellen Myers Sharp. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about bees today, about WFYI's bees and ways to attract bees and other important pollinators to your landscape. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Ross Harding, who is a member of the Central Indiana Beekeepers Association and is WFYI's beekeeper, and Joellen Myers Sharp, a veteran of the program here. We're trying to figure out if this is the third or fourth time she's been back on. She is an Indiana Garden author and Garden Magazine editor. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
It's good to have you here. So let's talk a little bit to get started about why bees are important, why they matter, because it's one of those things a lot of people, I think, tend to think of them as pests, as something only, you know, the only possible interaction you can have with one is that you get stung, when in fact they fill some pretty important roles. We'll start with you on that one, Ross.
Well, I'd say bees are important for a lot of reasons, primarily the food industry. They contribute to a third of all the food that we eat, billions of dollars worth of agricultural crops, and pollinating a lot of those foods for us. And the honey. We can talk about that a little
later. We'll talk about the honey, too. Joellen, why are bees important?
We need them for flowers. We need them for fruit production. And like Ross said, for food production. So, I mean, we would all not be here for very long if we didn't have bees.
So in terms of, and I probably ought to ask, Ross, how did you go about becoming a beekeeper?
I get asked that question a lot, and I always have fun with it. But the truth is I was reading an article about 4.5 years ago about how easy it was to catch a bee swarm, you know, how easy you can build your own hive, the benefits of honey and making mead. And I thought, wow, that sounds so interesting. So I spent time with an individual who's kept bees. I spent 1 hour with him. I thought, yeah, this is great. So the next, I think that night I bought bees on Craigslist for $100. Mm-hmm. And then boom, I was a beekeeper.
And to get started as a beekeeper, how do you obviously you had to buy the bees for $100. What else did you have to do and what goes into keeping them?
I was kind of a bootleg beekeeper.
Oh, okay.
So I really didn't have a lot of the tools. A lot of people use a smoker. I didn't have a smoker. I kind of like bundled up like dried grass and bark and made like a torch and like lit on fire and blew it out. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like that. I wanted to be like as Renaissance as possible with it. But it's really, really all you really need is the bees, protection, maybe a smoker and a tool. I mean, it's real easy.
Okay, so when you say the bees, what kind of protection are you talking about?
You usually want to cover your face with a veil. Bees kind of tend to go that way if you upset them. There's a lot of bees that are so gentle, it's surprising. But you can also make them pretty mad. I think they've kind of learned over the years that if you go towards something that's attacking you's face, it moves away pretty quickly. So definitely a veil, maybe some gloves.
Okay. And do you need to establish what sort of things? Keep in mind, I know this is the stuff you live with and you've acquired this knowledge, but a lot of the folks who are listening here need to start from zero on how you keep bees. So In terms of the hive and establishing a habitat for them, what goes into that?
Well, I'd say if anyone was interested in keeping bees, it's good to go to one of the associations in your area. There's a Beekeepers of Indiana is a new merge between the Indiana Beekeeping Association and the Indiana State Beekeepers. I'd recommend getting a mentor, doing some internet searching. But usually a lot of people say, well, I'd love to keep bees, but I just don't have that big of a backyard. Mm-hmm. I tell them I don't even have a backyard. usually you put them out somewhere as much sun as possible, kind of south, southeast facing, getting them going. And you'll be surprised if you yourself can't keep bees and you're interested, you may know somebody who'd like to have them on their property.
Joellen, how big a phenomenon is this? I mean, how many folks are there who keep bees?
I think it rivals the concern about monarch butterflies, actually, which everyone's worried about the loss of monarchs and planting milkweed. And I think people are very conscious of the fact that certain plants are more supporting of a bee environment than others. I think that a lot of consumers are recognizing the fact that, you know, the spray of the day is not always going to work if you're really trying to support bees in your own landscape. You know, you really need to be mindful of what fungicides especially and pesticides, insecticides that you might be using. And I think that people are also, the consumer, the gardening consumer, wants to know if the plants they're buying have been treated with certain chemicals, systemics particularly, which go all the way into the pollen and nectar of the plants. And so a lot of garden centers get asked those questions, like what have these plants been treated with?
If you are just joining us, we are talking about bees here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Jay has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. He writes, it's hard for me to see the decline and stress in the bee population as anything other than the inevitable outcome of corporate agriculture's war on nature. Inoculating seeds and spraying pesticides and insecticides on vast monocropped fields, which are ideal breeding grounds for pest insects, will inevitably adversely affect not only the intended pest insects, but also the beneficial ones. Even genetically modified crops intended to reduce or eliminate the use of chemical pesticides have failed to thwart nature's inclination toward biodiversity. Joellen, less of a question than a comment there, but it speaks to the concern that you were referencing.
It does. Before. It does. And I will say that, you know, so there was a Purdue research paper that came out earlier this year, and it talked about soybean seeds that had been treated with a systemic pesticide and how that pesticide is only really effective for about 3 weeks. And Purdue determined that the use of the pesticide on those soybean seeds was not necessary. And I think that farmers and maybe like smaller independent farmers as well as some big ag farmers are being more mindful, I think, about what pesticides they're using, how they're using them, the sort of like how much they're repeated. They're also practicing more sustainable practices in how they farm. You know, it's not going to be an easy fix, I don't think, because we've had decades of big ag where spraying and treating was just the way that they operated and the way many of them still operate. But I think they're being more thoughtful in that and how they're using these chemicals on their land.
Yeah, we've gotten another similar comment question from our regular listener named Marion, who says, it is essential that we protect bees from the relentless harm of industrialized agriculture. However, given the seriousness of their demise, perhaps beekeeping on any level is a luxury we cannot afford if we are to preserve life on this planet. Honey isn't essential for survival. Cooking destroys the healing properties. Given global addiction to sweets, epidemic of obesity and diabetes, even backyard breeders support what has become a cruel industry. I propose not only increased efforts to expose and legislate against the abuses of industrialized food production, but also allowing bee colonies to live undisturbed, protecting them and their habitat, the same way we must protect birds and other factory farm species threatened by man. Honey belongs to the bees. Bees, sentient or not, live a complex life in tune with natural law. By what authority do we disturb, kill, breed, buy, sell, and exploit them for profit or pleasure? Please discuss the ethics of beekeeping on any level. Okay, Ross, I think that one's that one was launched your way.
That's a really good question. And a lot of people have an idea that they can keep bees and not look at them at all. And it's kind of a mix, because you really need to, if you're going to keep bees, examine them for disease. And as well as, I don't want to say exploiting them, but every single almond that is created had to be touched by a honeybee. So California produces, I want to say, 80 to 90% of the world's almonds.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the biggest exploitation, I think, is having rows and rows of these monocultured plants, trees, and bringing 80% of all beehives in the United States out there. I do a lot of wild hive rescue mm-hmm. from trees and people's properties, and I agree. I mean, it's beautiful. They're not disturbing anybody, but if the tree is coming down because there's a big hollow hole in it and bees are inside, you know, something needs to be done about those bees.
I think, too, yeah, I think maybe the caller is looking at sort of bee labor,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we're employing bees or working bees, their labor to harvest the honey. And I suppose that's just a decision that each individual is going to have to make in terms of his or her own philosophy on that.
Well, the argument, the ethics of it, I mean, are there things that are considered to be unethical practices when it comes to beekeeping? You're nodding your head, Ross, and sadly it's an oral medium, so we have to talk here.
I think there is definitely some practices that are not great. I mean, some people just look at bees as honey. Mm-hmm. And
right.
For me, I'll be honest, I kind of was into it because I learned about all the health benefits for humans with honey. But as soon as I started keeping bees, I fell in love with the bees. And that's what it's always about for me, is just caring for the bees, getting them to survive. So I know that some people will harvest all the bees' honey and try to get them to survive the winter on, like, sugar water.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
Not good. Not natural.
How threatened? I mean, we've got two emails here from listeners who clearly see bees as a threatened population here on the world. How serious is this threat, Joellen?
I think the USDA, the most recent figures are there was a 44% loss of bees. So 44% of bee colonies collapsed in 2015-16. Mm-hmm. Which is about what it's been, I think, the last few years, in the 40%, 40 to 50%.
That's right.
So we've lost 40 to 50% of
bee colonies. These are kept bees.
Okay.
That we know they're there. We count how many there are. What we don't have numbers on are what the loss is among sort of native bees.
Yeah, wild bees.
Right, which we don't have any way of really counting those.
What is your sense, though? I mean, it is... Because there is obviously a concern here that the pesticides and all of that have been affecting them.
I don't know why it wouldn't affect native bees, wild bees, just like it would, you know, cultivated bees.
So we could assume that the bee population has decreased by 40, 50%, somewhere in there, 40 to 45, I think you said.
I don't know that I
safe?
Would say that. I don't have good numbers on that, so.
Okay. Obviously you're working with rescue missions, Ross. What's your take on it?
That is the amount of loss that they have every year on bees. It has gone up. But beekeepers are doing things to try to make those numbers back up. Every year, it's in usually the bees' nature to split, to swarm. And you can do some management practices to get a few more hives out. So I think that's what a lot of people are doing. So, yeah, we'll take a 40, 45% loss. And beekeepers will make up for that by, you know, raising new queens and trying to get their colonies reestablished.
How far back do those numbers go? I mean, I would think doing a census on bees is relatively
tough. I'd say it
goes
back to before they knew how complex the problem is with bees, but it went back primarily to the viral mite, which was a sort of an insect that destroys bees and their hives. That was the first thing that people really noticed. And now there's a combination of other factors, along with viral mite, possibly insecticide poisoning, fungicide poisoning, you know, those things that are also possibly a part of it. Some funguses and...
We are talking about bees and beekeeping here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. That's a toll-free call. You also can reach out to us by email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are Ross Harding, who is a member of the Central Indiana Beekeepers Association and is, in fact, WFYI's beekeeper, and Joellen Meyer-Sharp, an Indiana Garden author and Garden Magazine editor. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about bees, how to attract bees, and other important pollinators to your little patch of earth. My guests are Ross Harding, who's a member of the Central Indiana Beekeepers Association and WFYI's beekeeper, and Joellen Meyer-Sharp, who's an Indiana Garden author and Garden Magazine editor. Gotten an email from our regular listener, Jerry. If you would like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. He says, today's guest, Ross Harding, is the WFYI beekeeper. Really? This is not a joke. I have friends and neighbors who are beekeepers, and they are, he's got this in caps, they are very nice people and good citizens, but I had no idea the WFYI had an official beekeeper. Is this an honorary title, or is Mr. Harding getting some of my pledge money for his services? If so, I cannot disapprove, but I am certainly surprised. Warmly, Jerry. So why don't we talk a little bit about what WFYI's and I's relationship is with its bees and how we got here.
All right. I think a large part of it has to do with there's a large green roof here. Which was created because underneath that roof was a studio, and I was under the impression that every time it rained, they had to quit filming or being on air. So it kind of goes hand in hand, and I also want to thank George and Christine Plews, who were monumental in getting this the beehives here. They helped put bees on the NPR's headquarters in Washington, D.C., and I think there was this word about it'd be nice to have bees here in Indianapolis, and they reached out to my association, and now there's bees on the roof.
Okay. How long have we had the bees up there?
This would be the second year.
Second year. And I should say when we initiated this, the Plews were guests on the show, and we talked about the launch of the WFYI bee initiative. How are they doing up there on the roof?
They're doing really, really well. I just went up there and checked on them. Large populations, busy as bees.
And I should say to our listeners, if you want to see some pictures of Ross working with the bees, we have them up on Facebook and Twitter right now. So you can visit our sites at No Limits WFYI or just WFYI on Twitter and see what it looks like. Was it easy to create a kind of bee colony up there on the roof in the middle of downtown Indianapolis?
It was a bit of a challenge finding a spot for the bees. There is the green roof, and I really wanted to put the bees right there in that pasture, but I didn't think that it would get enough sun and wind protection. So we found a spot that gets the most amount of sun but also is protected from the wind up there. And luckily, I didn't have to bring the beehives up a really skinny ladder, but I did have to bring them through a window.
I was going to say you had to go through a window to get on the roof there.
And how often do you have to come check on them?
I usually check colonies every 10 days or so.
Okay, so every week and a half or whatever you come by and and check out.
Less in the winter.
What sort of maintenance do they need?
You want to make sure that they have enough room but not too much room, that you have a queen that's laying, that they have a healthy population, and that they're on track to make enough honey to survive the winter, which on average is about 60 pounds.
And how does one become a member of the Central Indiana Beekeepers Association?
Just show up.
just show up. Is it just strictly a voluntary organization, or are there certain qualifying parts?
It is a voluntary organization. That is one small club under what was once the Indiana Beekeepers Association. There are different clubs spread out through Indiana, and so we're the Central Indiana Beekeepers Association here in Marion County.
How many people belong to it?
Hundreds, over 300 people.
It has a website.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can visit it and find out and see the membership totals. Is this something, Joellen, that has grown?
Beekeeping?
Yeah, because I think of it like early on, my father-in-law kept bees years and years and years ago, but he would point out that pretty much made him unique in his social circle. You hear a lot more people talking about
it. Yeah, I did a piece not too long ago about Indiana gardening in the 1860s. Mm-hmm. And there were these almanacs that were written like the Western Gardener, although it was about Indiana gardening. And there were all these articles about beekeeping. So we know that beekeeping was going on in the 1800s. And they were probably kept for the same reasons that we're keeping them for today, which is pollinating crops and harvesting honey. And so, yes, I would say that beekeeping has become more popular. And I don't think it's necessarily for the honey. I think it's just to have bees out there working, pollinating, you know, flowers and fruits, the vegetables, and you can usually tell if someone in your neighborhood has bees, because really early in spring, I find honeybees on my crocus, for instance, like in February. And so I know that there's someone in my area who's keeping bees. And the other thing that I think a lot of people don't realize is that honeybees are not a native bee. They're an introduced bee. But we actually brought them here for the purpose that we use them for, which is pollinating. And also honeybees have a habit that's called, what do they call that, where it's...
Swarming?
Well, no, it's like bee fidelity. So when they go out, they may go to, say, all of the clover in whatever area they're in, and then they come back and they deposit whatever they get from the clover, and then they go out again and maybe they're on all of the sunflowers that are out there, and then they come back. So they're very sort of crop specific. Okay. And that's how you get clover honey and lavender honey, because the bees are set up in those fields, and that's where they harvest and bring back the honey, which is then, you know, collected and sold.
Do they do that sequentially, or is it, you know, that if you're part of a certain hive and tradition, you only deal with clover or lavender? Or
no, they can change it up. When they go out, they usually only visit one type of plant, so one species. So they might only visit salvia, bring back what they collect, go out, visit coneflowers, bring back what they collect. They're not like butterflies where they flit from flower to flower, different species, and even our bumblebees go flower to flower. They don't have bee fidelity like honeybees do.
Okay, so they're very goal-oriented.
They are very goal-oriented. I mean, their goal is to work, you know, and to please that queen.
Ross, you said something earlier where you said, you know, at first you got into it because you'd read about the benefits of honey. But then it got to the point where it was really about getting to know the bees. What is it about that people need to know about bees? When you say getting to know them, you know, what satisfactions are there in that relationship for you?
I'm going to refer back to an old mentor of mine, Sam Dodd, who really stresses learning about the nature of things. And part of that love was grown from learning about the nature of the bees, to just see them and learn. I mean, they are just so fascinating, the amounts of information that they share and the ways that they share that information, and to learn how they do it. I mean, my mind was blown time and time again, and it still is. Just the facts alone about how far they can travel, how they communicate through pheromone and dance. Mm-hmm. It's spectacular.
How far can they travel? I mean, you're raising You're raising important questions here, interesting things.
Well, that's good because you asked about also, you know, the bees downtown, and people are concerned about that. Bees, on average, they can travel up to 3 miles from the hive in all directions and come back.
Okay.
So there's a lot of forage here.
Okay, so they can move. Okay, all right. We're roughly at 16th and Meridian here, so they can move pretty close to Broad Ripple, it sounds like.
Yeah. And, you know, so that's how flowers get pollinated, and we get, you know, crab apples, and we get other kinds of fruits because they travel from the hives to where they can find either nectar or pollen, and, you know, that's their job. They have, I don't know so much about honeybees because I don't keep honeybees, but I love the bumblebees because they're big and you can see them, and they're very docile. If you go out there early in the morning, they're like, to me, they're like just totally drunk on whatever they're collecting. They're like asleep on the flowers, and you can pick them up and you can move them around, and they're real fuzzy. And they have these like bags on their legs, little pollen bags. And so depending on how much work they've been doing, those bags may be really big. And bumblebees are the ones that the aeronautics folks say shouldn't be able to fly.
Yeah.
And when you look at them, you think, gosh, they do look kind of large and bulky and kind of not very slick compared to, say, certain wasps or native bees or the honeybees, which are sort of narrower. And yeah, but I think bees are just interesting. And the worrisome bees are generally the solitary bees, the carpenter bees. People worry about them drilling into their fences or their houses. And a lot of times bees are confused with wasps. And wasps also are an important pollinating insect, but they also can be dangerous to humans.
We are talking about bees and beekeeping and the virtues of that bees bring to the natural world and to our way of life. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Kelly has done and reach out to us via Facebook. Find us at nolimits@wfyi. Kelly says, can your guests talk about the best practices to use when choosing where to purchase bees and from whom to purchase them, Ross?
There's a lot of options. You can actually order bees in the mail. You'll probably get a call at 5 a.m. by the post office and say, how soon can you come get these bees? There are some local beekeepers that offer bees. If you're going to get bees, the sooner the better. May, June, July may be a little too late for them to get enough honey to survive the winter. I could throw shout-outs if you wanted me to.
Go ahead. Go ahead. That's what the caller asked for. Yeah.
All right. My friends Tim and Matt are Indie Bee Supply. They build they assemble beehives. They're supplying a lot of people with their bee needs right now. Debbie and Mike Seib, she's the treasurer of the Beekeeping Association. They also are carry bee equipment from Kelly's Bees. There's a lot of people that are doing it. I'm sure if you just Googled, Indianapolis bees or beekeeping, you may have luck. Also, if you come to a meeting, you're likely to find somebody who may have a little too many bees and need to help you out.
So are they only honeybees, or can I know you can also order like mason bees and blue bees, which are native bees.
Yeah.
And so do they trade in those also, or just primarily honeybees?
Not so much. You know, what I'm seeing people do is make these little solitary bee houses. So they're like burying like PVC pipe in the ground, or they're getting little like cardboard pieces and
bamboo stakes.
Yeah, bamboo.
Yeah.
And they're just they want to help all pollinators, not just honeybees. So I'm seeing a lot more increase in that as well.
Are there costs associated with this? I mean, you said you spent $100 to get your bees. I mean, you know, how much does it cost to maintain a bee colony? Would you say over the course of a year?
Yeah, that was maybe 4 or 5 years ago. You may find an old timer that will just give you bees like that. But normally, if you get a package of bees, it's about 3 pounds of bees and a queen. Now that goes for about $110. You'll still need to buy the equipment, which is going to cost anywhere from $250 to $350.
Okay, and then are there ongoing costs on top of that for you know, what you do?
There's a member of our association
other
that does
your bee, time.
Bee talks. He says, he says the only thing you need to be to be a, to, the only thing you need to have to be a successful beekeeper is a pen to write your checks with. So I mean, it can be a hobby that you know is you kind of got to pay to play sometimes.
But if you were harvesting the honey, you could sell the honey, you know, possibly recover
some of the costs.
Cost that way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of school gardens have beehives now, and there are beehives down at the Children's Garden at Garfield Park. So they're, you know, trying to become, I think, more common and try to dispel any fears that people have about bees.
Mm-hmm. We've gotten an email from a listener named Jerry, and if you'd like to find us on email, you can. You can track us down at nolimits@wfyi.org. He says, thank you for addressing such an important subject, offers his compliments to the two of you, and says he knows both of you and that you're both good people. Please address the importance of communities, towns, and cities establishing a welcome stance toward honeybees and beekeepers. Indianapolis, Marion County is to be commended for open and policies encouraging beekeeping in all areas of the county. We are indeed a bee-friendly city. It is discouraging that some towns, Brownsburg, for example, are much less progressive. Keep up the good work, all three of you, well, primarily the two of you. And then says, oh, yes, have Ross comment on other beekeeping groups in the WFYI listening area. For example, Indy Southside Beekeepers meets in the Wanamaker area. There are also clubs in Carmel, Greenfield, Martinsville, and other nearby counties. So let's start first with what makes a city bee-friendly as opposed to not being bee-friendly?
Well, I think not having zoning that would allow it, for one thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are homeowners associations that will not allow hives in the neighborhood. But in general, there are no zoning regulations in Indianapolis that prevent us having a hive in our garden, in our yard. Where there are some communities that you couldn't do that.
Deliberately? I mean, I'm assuming you can't stop it if the bees just locate there on themselves.
Well, you can't have a hive. It would be, beekeeping involves a hive usually. Mm-hmm. And so it would be, there are some homeowners association that would not allow that, would not allow you to put a hive in your garden, in your yard, in your neighborhood. But the city in general has no zoning regulations that prevent that.
What is the reasoning behind? I'm sorry, and I'm going to let you jump in here, Ross, but what is the reasoning behind saying that you can't have a hive?
I think fear.
Mm-hmm. That people are going to get stung or something like
that. Yeah, that, and, you know, the next thing they're going to have horses and cows in their backyard. I don't know where, you know.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's part of it, is just a sort of a lack of information and a lack of understanding and a little ignorance about the process.
How old are those codes? Because it does seem like, while obviously the scientific understanding of the importance of bees to the ecosystem has been around for obviously a long, long time, mm-hmm. The popular understanding of that has been a little bit slower to arrive. How much of those codes is still based on, say, a 1930s or 1940s thinking that bees are primarily pests, the only thing they can do is sting you and it hurts?
Well, and I think that's what the fear is. I keep bees for a family up in Carmel, and they got a letter by the neighbor's grandchild who says, "Why do you have bees? This is not a farm. Every year we see bees trying to get into our house in the fall, and my little brother got stung by bees, and it's horrible that you're doing this. Why don't do this?" And I think a lot of it was based out of fear, and the bees trying to get in the house is not the honeybees. It's more likely yellow jackets.
Yeah.
How did, out of curiosity, when you get a letter like that, how do you respond to it?
Well, it really hurt. Her name is Leanne. It really hurt her feelings to get a letter like that. And I just said, it's okay. So a lot of neighbors don't know and don't understand. So a lot of it is just teaching them about bees, that their mission here is not to sting you. And they always say, you know, give them a little honey to sweeten the deal. And maybe later we can talk more about the Brownsburg and all that.
Yeah, and we're going to pick up the other parts because Jerry actually gave us several questions, mm-hmm. a lot to chew on here, and we're going to pick that up on the other side of the break. If you are just joining us, we are talking about bees and beekeeping here on No Limits. My guests are Ross Harding, who's a member of the Central Indiana Beekeepers Association and is also WFYI's beekeeper, and Joellen Meyer-Sharp, who's an Indiana garden author and Garden Magazine editor. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866. I should say give us a buzz, yeah. 866-476-3881. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about bees, how to attract them, and the role they play in making our lives possible. My guests are Ross Harding, who's a member of the Central Indiana Beekeepers Association and is WFYI's beekeeper, and Joellen Meyer-Sharp, who's an Indiana Garden author and Garden Magazine editor. Just before the break, we were talking about an email from a listener named Jerry who talked about bee-friendly cities and places that aren't, and he specifically mentioned Brownsburg. Ross, what makes Brownsburg not so bee-friendly?
There was a beekeeper there that either had two or three hives and was basically told that he had 10 days to remove those hives. And this is the very peak of honeybee time. This is when they're bringing in all their nectar to survive the winter. So this went around the beekeepers, and there's kind of a motion to appeal that. But it's becoming an issue over there, and I think a lot of it's due to misunderstanding.
He was told by
the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and is there, I mean, they don't get to arbitrarily make up rules, presumably, that there was some ordinance on the books there that allowed them to do that.
There must have been. I've been trying to follow the email thread about all that, and it's a lot. I know that there's a motion to challenge it, and there's something about agriculture. So we're going to have to see where that goes, really.
Okay, we've gotten another email from a listener named Elizabeth, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. And Elizabeth says, I am a do-no-harm kind of human, yet I have carpenter bees doing a number on my cedar home near around the roof line. They've been there for years. Can you speak to their role and importance in the ecosystem and offer any tips to discourage them boring and nesting in my home that does not involve killing them? Joellen, we'll start with you.
Well, that's a hard one. That really is a hard one. And I think that you just have to decide, you know, because they can be damaging to fences and the fascia boards on houses and things like that. And Purdue has a what they call a bulletin out on carpenter bees. It's a solitary bee. They tend to return to the same place year after year. You know, their whole life cycle is sort of interesting, how they lay their eggs in the little tunnel that they develop and everything. And I really think that the person should go to Google and type in Carpenter Bees Purdue and get the information on how to handle that.
Getting back to the note that a little boy, I guess, up in Carmel sent to the neighbors, if the presence of bees does bother you, are there ways you can discourage them from being around you that, as she says, that stop short of killing them? And it may be like in some cases, certain kinds of bee stings I'm allergic to. That's not a good thing for me.
Right.
I get stung. But, you know, I got as much right to live as I do.
Bees are more, you know, more damaging than others. People get wigged out by cicada killers, which is actually a wasp.
Yeah.
Because they flit around the yard and people who are allergic to bees think they're going to be stung. You know, and those are not stinging bees or wasps. But I think, you know, you just need to be mindful. If you have an allergy, you want to probably reduce the kinds of flowers that attract bees around your house and in your garden. Those would be the main things if you had an allergy that you would want to avoid.
Are there ways, though, other than, you know, reducing, saying you're going to do without flowers to some degree, are there ways that you can discourage their presence, Ross? Or is it pretty much once they're there, they're there?
Well, it's funny that people don't want, you know, they don't want their neighbors to have bees because they don't want bees in their yard. Well, even if their neighbors didn't have bees, it's still very possible you'd still have bees in your yard.
Yeah.
They're a part of nature. And I think if someone is anaphylactically allergic to bees, they should have an EpiPen no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's not in their nature just to come after you and sting you. If you get stung by a honeybee, I guarantee it's generally by an accident. They were on some clover, you stepped by it, or you know they flew by you, you swatted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not. Their mission is not to come after you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and presumably, is the story that we've always been told is once they sting you, they die. Mm-hmm. Is that the case? You know, some bees.
Wasps don't always.
Not wasps. Honeybees
do. Not wasps, but. Bees do, by and large, right?
Yeah. And I think between the two, wasps are sort of scarier than bees are.
Mm-hmm.
And if you walk down what's called the chemical aisle in the garden centers, there are no products approved for use on bees, which I think is very interesting. And there are products approved for the use on wasps, but not for bees.
Why is that?
Because bees are considered a beneficial insect.
Okay. So there's a...
That's not to say there isn't stuff out there that would kill them.
Yeah. But it's not set up to kill them.
And it's not... You know, all the products that you use are all EPA controlled. And so the EPA, there are no registered products that the consumer can buy that can be used on bees.
We are talking about bees here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Ron has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ron, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks for taking my call once again, John.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
And let me give a shout-out to Marion. I've been an organic grower for almost 30 years now, a small farm. We've had bees on the place. In fact, my wife still has an organic business off the farm. We've had bees on the place. I appreciate, contrary to what Marion said, I appreciate your guest who is maintaining bees. The day may come where we have to rely on those people who are basically saving the bees away from the agricultural commercial bees who may see a demise, and then we're all going to be in trouble when that happens. And the pesticide, herbicide, insecticide, all that is the problem. I attribute that to for humankind as being a side for one of the sides for a human. You know, you may spray a spider in your house and the spider's dead immediately, and who knows, you may last 15 years or your kids before it affects you. And you know where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, and as far as your caller that worried about carpenter bees, I used to knock them down with a tennis racket. They are so destructive. My thought is that they'll have to find someplace else. I'm sure there's a benefit in nature for the carpenter bees, but it's not in my house or on my house because they are very destructive. I used to take them down with a tennis racket. As far as I know, they don't sting. I suspect they could bite pretty good, though. And now I've built myself a house that's too tall to reach them with a tennis racket, so I use 22 birdshot. And I've become quite good at it. But as far as something that she might try, a product that I've used, there is an all-natural tongue oil. It's not petroleum-based tongue oil, and it has a thinning agent for the tongue oil to make it thinner so it will apply, soak in. They use citrus oil. And citrus oil is a product, my understanding, that most insects do not care for. So a combination of those two things, she might try applying that to her cedar home, and that may work for her.
Thanks very much for taking my call. Certainly. Thanks for calling, Ron. And Joellen is nodding her head, so I'm assuming she agrees with you.
Well, I think that, you know, you'd have to explore what lethal ways there would be to control them. You know, it's the matter of control rather than eliminating. Mm-hmm. That's the distinction that we need to make.
We are talking about bees here on No Limits. Anne, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I have two questions, and I'll make them quick. The first one being, is there, maybe it's the organization that the gentleman that's on the show, a place you can call when you find a swarm. I used to live downtown in Indy for many years, and one afternoon we found a swarm in our alley, and my neighbor wanted to call an exterminator, and I was, you know, I hurriedly said, no, I know people that, you know others who keep bees, and I put a post out on Facebook, and within 2 days I had somebody come and get the swarm. which was great. However, it happened to me again up here, and I live in Zionsville now, and I couldn't find anybody to take it, and an exterminator ended up taking it.
Okay, we'll see if we can get any. You'll go ahead.
Out people that would.
Ann, you're cutting out on us, so I'm gonna throw the question to Ross. Thanks very much for the call, Ann.
Really quick, there is a list. It's on the DNR website of people who will come out and capture swarms. Usually beekeepers will capture them for free, but if you have bees inside of a structure, it's a little bit more difficult, and you may find beekeepers who charge for that.
We've gotten a question via Twitter from a listener named Gretchen. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. Gretchen says, how do you keep bees, carpenter and otherwise, from building in or on my house while trying to attract them to my garden, which is presumably the place you want them?
I can say just one more thing about that. This is a little different than the person with the cedar home, but normally on your house, if you have one of those holes, it's a little 3/8-inch hole that those bees have created. If you can fill that up and then paint, if you have a nice thick layer of paint, those bees don't like to bore through paint.
Oh, so if you've got a thick layer of paint, that will work. We've also gotten an email from Jim Poyser. I think I can use his name over the air. He's the executive director of Earth Charter Indiana. And he wanted to make the point that on Earth Day, April 22nd, Mayor Joe Hogsett made an official proclamation that Indianapolis is a bee-friendly city. This announcement was made at the Arts Garden site of an exhibit of bee sculptures by Indiana fourth graders, a Sustain Indy-funded project by Earth Charter Indiana and Bee Public. This project, Save the Bees, Indiana, has instructed hundreds of area students and helped start beehives in 5 schools. Presumably, Ross, Joellen, you're in favor of that.
Yes, and I will say that the nursery and landscape industry has, you know, they're in the process, I guess, of stepping up on how they can grow their plants, how they sell their plants, what kinds of products they're using on the plants. American Horticulture, which is a large conglomerate group of various nurseries and growers, has a huge bee-friendly program. They're doing a lot of research trying to determine exactly what's going on with bee populations and what they can do as an industry to protect that. The National Garden Bureau has a huge program, plant 1 million plants to support bees. We haven't really talked about how plants support bees and what we can do as a gardener if we don't want to have a hive in our yard, you know, what we can do to have bees in our yard.
Yeah, we're getting somewhat tight on time here. And we've got calls and emails, so I'm going to ask our listeners to be as succinct as possible with their questions. Mac, welcome to the program.
Hi, and hi. Shout out to Ross.
Hey, Mac.
I'm a fellow beekeeper. Hey, how's it going?
Good, man.
Ironically, I'm on my way to a swarm call.
All right.
So this is a very active time for the honeybees to be replicating their hives by swarming. Since the previous caller sort of took my public service announcement away about what do you do when you see a bee swarm, I guess I'll switch my comment/question to talking about President Obama had issued an executive order for each state in the country to do a pollinator protection plan. I attended a couple meetings and other beekeepers as well as other stakeholders that the Indiana State Chemist Office ran the office, but they're the ones that have to come up with this plan for the state of Indiana. And I'm concerned about the neonics chemicals that are being used in seed coatings. Purdue has their entomology department has done extensive research and determined that the neonics in the seed coatings are actually missing the target pest insect, but it becomes systemic in the plants that then our bees are visiting, and they're basically taking toxic pollen back to the hive and feeding it to their young. And I was just curious if Ross has anything more to say about that and what we might do as hooters to continue kind of pushing that debate a little further.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Mac. Ross.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mac. Yeah, a lot of the seeds are coated in a neonicotinoid, which is a systemic pesticide. So as the plant grows, it is constantly absorbing that and it's in, found in all parts of that plant. Also, a lot of the plants that people buy at big box stores, even in the soil, I mean, they'll sell plants that say bee friendly, but they're still neonics in the soil.
Right. Home Depot has actually launched a program, and their plants are now marked if they're treated with a neonic or if they are untreated. Lowe's is heading in that direction. You know, if you as a consumer want to know about the plants that you're getting ready to buy, you need to ask the people at the garden center where you're shopping if these plants have been treated. If they don't know, ask them to find out if they know. I did a story about this last year, and one of the largest wholesalers in the state does not use neonics on anything. The burpee people like Ball Horticulture, they do not recommend or using neonics on any of the annuals that they sell. But there are some nurseries in other states that do consistently use neonics on their plants in order to ship them from state to state. And that's why the nursery industry is sort of looking at that and trying to figure out how they can do away with that practice.
Tom, welcome to the program.
Hello. I just wanted to make a quick comment and question about a swarm we had last week. A beekeeper came out within about an hour, brought a new beekeeper with him, and trained him on how to capture the swarm. He was very professional, and I just wondered if there in the organization are training programs on how to do that with the courtesy and professionalism, or whether that's just his nature or how that might work. And that's all I have.
Thanks very much for the call and question, Tom. Ross.
I've always found beekeepers to be very nice people, always willing to help and share the knowledge. If you want any info on catching a swarm, you can see a ton of it on YouTube. Also, we go over that in meetings. Pretty easy, actually. It's pretty fascinating.
We've got a couple of quick hit questions I'm going to try to sneak in before we go off the air. I got a listener on Facebook who asked, are carpenter bees pollinators or pests?
They're a pollinator.
They are a pollinator. So we answer that one pretty
really,
quickly.
Really, there are like 2% of insects that would be considered a pest.
Okay. Okay. So, but they do have a vital role then.
Yeah, they have. They do.
As being a pollinator. And then we have an email question from a listener named Nancy who asks, does the hive have to be placed in the sun? Ross.
Does not have to be, but it will do better. If you have a hive in the shade, you're going to get small hive beetle, which you'll have anyways, but their population will be a lot higher.
What is small hive beetle?
It's just another one of the pests that are bugging bees.
Okay.
Came from Africa, and they don't tolerate the heat as well. So that's why it's good to have the bees in the sun.
In the sun, so it works as kind of a natural discouraging agent or whatever. Control on the populations. Well, I can tell from the calls and all of that that we probably could spend at least another hour talking about this.
We'll come back.
But sadly, well, and we would love to have you back. We would love to have you back always. I think this one obviously is going to be an annual show. I'd like to thank both of my guests, Ross Harding and Joellen Meyer Sharp, for what has been a buzzing conversation about bees. Thanks both of you for being here.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank our listeners for some really, really great questions. I'm sorry if we did not get to all of them or did not get every one of them addressed in the fashion that you wanted. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.